Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you. Welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, a man who once considered himself a trendsetter, even though he never set a trend, George P. Fraser.
Hello, still
George.
Do, Billy.
I know you do, but you've never set a trend in your life.
I like the Shindig soundtrack. I feel like I'm at the beach in California with the surfboard.
You should have a little ukulele. You should be playing that when it comes
See
to
my T-shirt?
I know. What is with you?
Prodigal.
I know. That's so weird.
It should be prodigal in progress.
Yeah,
no kidding. Or process.
Yeah. I don't see you wearing clothes that have slogans on it, so that's new for me.
I was free.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so it's good to see you. This is going to be a great show.
It'll be a great show. Yeah. We're going to bring our guest on, time permitting, because you know how we get started.
We get rolling.
We get so interesting that we ended up never bringing the guest on.
That's happened. It happened last week, and it was a horrible show. It's just horrible.
It was not. George P. Fraser was our guest last
Horrible.
Time.
Shouldn't have him
No,
back.
No. You were good.
Huge mental
Your story,
health issues.
That I don't disagree with.
Yeah, no. Huge
but
mental
I think
health.
You
know what
it.
We should do is pray for that guy a lot.
Well, we do.
Do we?
We do,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have vigils.
So, the subject tonight is very common. And one of the things that happens to recovery people in church, there's certain things that you just don't talk about. It's not comfortable. And a great many people suffer from this, men and women, and it's like a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I like about the recovery rooms is we don't shoot our wounded, and everybody's welcome. I think it's like the first century church, actually. And you need an atmosphere like this on this topic to be able to talk about it and change.
Mm-hmm. George, let's talk a little bit about dopamine and the effects that dopamine have on the brain. Now, you can speak from experience being a former cocaine addict.
Right.
So you know what cocaine does for dopamine.
I think for me, a large part of my life, I was a dopamine binge. And coffee and sugar and working out, you know, always lighting the candle. And so what happens is we can release natural chemicals of dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine in our brains by working out and doing the work. But it's so much easier to take a drink, a drug, to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem starts. And tonight's subject is pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say that the only men I work with, including me, I had a problem with that, is the only men that have a problem with it are men that have seen it. I don't believe we're supposed to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you told me one time that 100 years ago, the average man saw one or two women naked in his lifetime, and now I think it was you. And then now, with cell phones, the average 12-year-old kid can light up 40 in 30 seconds.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's very, very different.
What I don't get is why that is so imprinted on the brain that I never need to see any the rest of my life. And yet, at the same time we were talking before the show, I have a real hard time memorizing scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that, you know, you talk about what wires together, fires together. There is that. And most of my clients, and I only work with men, they all are porn addicts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting how God installs this pharmacy of wonderful chemicals in our brains. They're built in. And
right.
All we have to do is figure out how to access them. Because we can have those beautiful releases, those dopamine releases through exercise and through laughter and all kinds of ways.
Well, and that's your department. And, you know, when we used to do the show and then go out and eat afterwards,
yeah.
That was the highlight of my week.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But for me, the reason I kept going back to use, and it took me 7 years to get a 1-year sobriety, was I missed getting high. If we look at the scriptures, and it talks about in Ephesians that you have to put off the old, but you need to put on the new. And for a lot of people, we stop the problem, or we think the problem. But usually it's a symptom of our self-centeredness, selfishness, and egocentrism of I want what I want when I want it. And really what you're doing is being God. And Bill, I read something in the Wall Street Journal last week that really knocked my socks off. And he's a priest in Canada, and he wrote that the reason abortion, euthanasia, changing your gender is such a big deal is the Creator made the creation, and we are part of the creation. We're a creature. And when we do those things, we move from the creature to the Creator. Mm. Isn't that good?
Yeah, that's really good.
And I think in our addiction as it goes along, you know, like maybe you see porn for the first time. I remember Playboy, and that's the forbidden fruit. And, man, you want to do it all the time, and you know what's wrong, but you're going to make the decision to do it because you like it.
Mm-hmm.
And God's forgotten about. You know, we talk about a step, and the best step on this is step one, where we admit we're powerless and our life is unmanageable. And pornography, if you see it, it's kind of like eating the apple back in the garden. It's going to change things for you.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more, George, about step one. We admitted we were powerless. Now, in the Big Blue Book, it says we're powerless over alcohol, but we could take out the word alcohol and put in virtually anything that's prone to addiction, pornography, anything, right? Drugs.
Totally.
Yeah.
So. And when I work with my guys, I kind of flip that around and I say, okay, you're powerless over drugs and alcohol. Tell me what you have control over.
Moo.
Because if God is sovereign, and he is, nothing happens that he doesn't allow. Our next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. And I think getting back into recovery from anything means giving the control of your life back to God. And it starts with the realization that you do not control anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to mess everything up. Amen for me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really good question, Bill.
And because we are image bearers of God, we are yet still, if you're outside of the family of God, you are powerless over sin because the power of sin has not been broken.
So yeah.
We can take out the word alcohol and put in powerless over sin.
And I like that. But the interesting thing to me is a lot of people that don't believe in God benefit from the general providence of God, in that I don't think anybody gets sober without God doing it. So you have a lot of people that are taking credit for what God did and not giving him credit, kind of like Romans 1. And it's interesting. I don't think anybody changes like that without God, even if they don't give him the glory.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Our guest, Peter, we haven't brought him on yet. And We might not.
We're kind of on a roll.
I feel a good vibe with us tonight.
Yeah,
George, so
it, yeah, we haven't had that in a long time.
May not happen. No, I know.
I think it's the dancing things behind you, like the disco balls. There.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, we've got the studio all decked out. Next week is our start of our spring fundraiser. And obviously, if you are just new to Faith Radio, like because you live in Montana, George, you know we have a station in Billings, Montana now.
I wonder if Beth Dutton listens to it.
Is this someone you know in Billings?
Yeah, she's on a TV.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Character in a TV show.
Yeah.
See, this she could use Real Recovery.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is how we're so different. But anyway, we're very grateful for all of our new Faith Radio family friends in Billings, Montana. So welcome. If you are just tuning in, obviously you're getting to know the network, and this is a show which, George, I think we're in our 12th year.
13th.
I don't know if it's 13.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah, which is unlucky. I thought we'd get canceled in week four.
Yeah, so. I thought so too.
Where is the station in Wyoming, do you know?
Well, I think it's a signal. So it's a tower. So we've got the connection through that tower. So Faith Radio gets broadcast. And I think Billings is a nice little town of about 120,000. But
I think that's in Montana.
That's the point. It is in Montana.
Okay.
So we're just want to say hi and welcome. And also, again, because we've got our really amazing spring fundraiser next week. So thank you for being willing to consider giving a gift of any size. So we're looking forward to that.
Okay.
It's always fun. All right. George, let's get back to step one, only because this has got to be when you say that I am powerless over, we'll just put in the word pornography because that's the topic tonight. I'm powerless over it. and life has become unmanageable. It seems that if you are powerless, how are you going to find a way to get out of this insanity?
Great question. So what happens is the addiction cycle. I get the feeling, then I seek the feeling. And then you go through the cycle of, I can go watch some pornography, looking forward to it. You do it. Then afterwards, you go into the shame barrel, and you, please forgive me, help me to never do it again. And maybe you go a couple days, and you are sincere. And then you go, you know, you haven't watched porn in 3 days. If you didn't watch it, all those people would be unemployed. I'm going to watch it. It's something like that, and it can be overpowering. People don't go back to it because they don't sincerely want to quit. It's bigger than they are. And one of the things you learn when you go with the dark forces or satanic activity, which I believe it is, so is cocaine, you need an outside agency that's stronger than that. The only one is God.
Mm-hmm.
But you go on that cycle all the time, and what we have to do is break the behavior pattern, and we can't do that without God's help.
Good point, George P. Fraser. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to bring on our guest, Peter. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, evening, morning. Yeah, it could be tomorrow. Yeah. We'll be right back with Real Recovery. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill Arnold and George Fraser. I don't know if you know this about George, but when George plays chess, he has never once said the word checkmate. Ever once.
That game is beyond my mental capability.
Well, I figured. You're more of a checkers guy, aren't you?
I'm more of a TV guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hockey.
I picture that. Yeah. Let's not talk about hockey. Let's bring our guest, Peter, on.
Yeah, this is going
to
be great.
He's got a great story, and I'm so grateful that he's willing to share life experiences, and it's going to be a great encouragement. And I hope there are people that not only listen and enjoy the show, but I know you've got a nephew, a grandson, somebody that will benefit from this as well. Peter, welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So thanks let us know. Me. Oh, go ahead.
No, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, of course. Let us know a little bit about young Peter growing up and what life was like, and just your growing up life.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I had a really, really wonderful, healthy, consistent life growing up. Grew up in a small town, and mom and dad stayed together, still together, two siblings. And, you know, I'm just, the more that I, just the older I get, and I'm not too old, you know, I'm 26, but the older I get, the more I realize how much of a gift that is, just to have family that's together.
Yeah.
Parents that aren't divorced, and not having to deal with that, all throughout. So life was really great. Grew up in the church. Parents are believers, siblings are believers, and church was just as normal as going to school.
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking my dad one night, I said, Dad, is Awana's and Awana attendance, isn't that more important than school? What do you think about it?
Yeah.
He agreed, I guess, but I still had to go to school the next morning.
You were like in second grade at that point, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working towards the Timothy Award.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a really great growing up. I'm one of three siblings, and they're 5 and 10 years older than me. So they were just my role models, my heroes. My older brother is just a stud, and just my absolute hero,
cool.
my role model, growing up. And yeah, honestly, you know, my story is not one of broken family background and relationships, abuse, trauma. There really was none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful for it. But yeah, really pretty normal.
Yeah. So when you were in youth group in church, were there ever discussions on sexuality?
There were sort of the notorious once a year talk on pornography.
Uh-huh.
Had an incredible youth pastor, really great guy. And you know, looking back, I just did not appreciate him or tap into that resource that he was as much as I should have. But when we would talk about it, we would split up guys and girls, go to different rooms. And I remember filling out a survey one night, and it said, do you know what pornography is? you know, I look around the room and everybody's like, what? Pornography? I don't know. I don't know what that is. And they're all lying. You know, that's not true.
Yeah.
And how often do you watch it? You know, have you...
Trick question if you answered no.
Right. You're sweating. You're like, I don't want to lie about this, but I also don't really want to tell the truth. And that was just a tough place to be. That really my... Between ages of 13 and 16 were honestly some of the darkest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Were you watching it then? Had you started?
Yes. Yep. Okay.
So how did you answer it?
I didn't lie. I said, yes, I've seen pornography. How often do you watch it? Once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good for you.
I didn't want to lie about it, but I didn't want to be as honest as they wanted me to be. But I was so terrified of being exposed,
yeah,
of my youth pastor going to my parents and really just my whole life, my image, my whole life falling apart.
Mm. He also could have considered 24 hours as 1 month. All depends on how you look at time, George.
Right. Yeah. Well, depending on the church, that could have caused an exorcism too. So, you know.
Exactly.
How did that feel for you? Because that had to be like one of the first times you're in church and you lied.
Yeah, it was awful. It was absolutely awful. My first exposure to pornography was nobody showed me on the bus. You know, nobody sent anything to me. No, I mean, there was no outside forces other than my own curiosity. I look back at that and I just think, man, if somebody had just had an anatomy textbook or something. I remember laying in my bed and I thought, I know what a man looks like. I don't know what a woman looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know.
Mm.
I just want to know. There was no sexual bent to it. There was pure curiosity. And I, growing up in a family of all medical professionals, I thought, man, I just need to find like some sort of diagram or graph. You know, I knew that existed. And so I took my iPod Touch with Safari and I looked up naked woman. And that was all she wrote. About a month or two later, discover what masturbation was. And that's when it the barbs just went much deeper. So to back to your original question, I thought I was the only person and certainly the only Christian in the world that struggled with pornography.
I get that. I mean, I started with National Geographic back when I was a kid, you know, the natives. And huge fan of National Geographic, you know, and it was forbidden and it was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my baseball card collection lost its importance the day I saw my first Playboy. And I think most guys are like that. And for you, I appreciate your honesty. So once you did that and got into masturbation, that's one of those things with guys I talk to that, you know, when they did it, I did it too. You know, you're going to do it again, right? And so are you thinking about this now when you're at school and has it started to creep into your life as one of your favorite activities?
You know, I can honestly say, George, my heart was so torn when I would act out.
Sure.
It was so torn. And I was so self-deceived and believed that this isn't really an addiction. The word addiction honestly didn't even come into my mind until this last year. Really identifying myself as an addict, I just thought this is a problem. I don't want to do it, but I'm not addicted to it.
Discipline issue,
right? Discipline issue, and it was always just so confusing. It felt like there's no rhyme or reason to this. I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm going back to it. I hate doing this, and yet I loved it too.
So you prayed to have it removed, and yet it was still there.
Absolutely.
So did you become kind of like the double-minded man who's unstable and all that he does, tossed about like waves on the ocean in James?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been there.
Absolutely.
That's awful.
It was extremely difficult because, again, the thing that I needed was to be exposed. The thing I needed was to confess. and that was the path to healing. And to have people walk alongside of me consistently, but that was the last thing I wanted. Because I thought if that happens, everyone's mindset, everyone's view and opinion of me is just going to plummet. And I'm just going to be in a world of hurt.
You got secrets now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a tough deal. And my guess is you really got into Bible reading and scripture memorization, and you're going to be the super Christian to help make up for this and change you. And maybe it went a while. Maybe the times got, you know, greater that you didn't do it, but you couldn't defeat it.
Absolutely. I remember distinctly, you know, acting out. And then I would get up in the morning and just feel like a completely different person than when I went to bed the night before. And going downstairs, getting ready for school, eating breakfast, and just feeling completely deflated. Like I can't look my family in the eye. You know, I can't look my mom in the eye, have a conversation with her. I'm just in this sort of fog of depression. And it was just a horrible place to be. And I thought people knew. You know, I just thought somebody was going to figure it out, you know, but I kept the secret pretty tight.
It's lonely. You're isolated from people because they don't really know you like they used to. And the mom is the worst thing on porn and masturbation. Absolutely the worst. And I remember a guy told me when I was struggling with cocaine addiction and pornography and other things, look at women as God's daughters, because that's what they are. And I thought, boy, am I in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. But that didn't help. It came back.
George, I'm curious, because what Peter said about feeling a disconnect with mom and dad in the morning, and maybe even family, is I wonder if this is something that other people listening right now have experienced, where their teenage boy is, you know, acting oddly, disconnected, and they don't know what's going on. But they oftentimes just write it off to be that difficult phase of life called adolescence.
Well, do you remember the first time you lied to your parents?
Yeah.
Okay. And how tough that is? It gets easier, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to lie to yourself to lie to your parents, but mm-hmm. we're moving away from God, and the truth is an absolute, John 14:6. And you don't want to be this guy, and you're going to beat it, but you can't, and you are that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. So you got something you're holding back from everybody, because if they knew, boy, what a fraud you are, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I just thought that my perception, my social equity, you know, my trustworthiness, everything was just going to be absolutely out the window once people found out.
So what was going on socially with you at that point? Did you have an interest in girls dating? What was going on in that department?
Yeah. At that point, not really. Growing up in the church and having older siblings as well, I had it pretty firmly in my mind, you know what, dating, high school, no, bad combination, not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not interested. I'm going to wait until college. I'm going to wait until afterwards. Didn't end up waiting. Started dating a girl junior year of high school. But socially, things were fine. I had great friends from our youth group. Was involved in sports, involved in band, involved in other extracurriculars. And so life was going on, but there was just sort of this dark haze over everything. And I think where it took an especially dark turn, and this sounds kind of bizarre, but I started looking into and understanding more about depravity, about human depravity. And like you referenced Romans 1 earlier, and I started learning. And as I learned, I thought, man, this is me, obviously. I'm totally dead in my sin. I'm totally unable to save myself. I'm totally under this spiritual death, you know. And instead of then that propelling me towards the goodness and grace of God, it's almost as if I just stayed there. You know, I had accepted Christ when I was very young, but the outworking of that was just sort of stopped. It was just stunted. because everything that I did, every mistake that I made, every was like, yep, see, I'm the worst, right? I'm dead in my sin and in my trespasses, and I can't do anything, right? And so my view of myself just became more and more and more negative as time went on.
So shame cycle, and also the deep sense of almost feeling like an ongoing failure.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that where the enemy would like to keep you stuck?
Right.
In that cycle of self-rejection.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got a double life. You got a secret that if people find out is going to change how everybody you know views you. And really, the loneliness comes from, I think, having gone through that, I'm creating an image of a person that I'm not. So even when people really like me, they like the person I created. They don't like me.
Mm.
And that's tough. And we all do that to some extent, you know, cue up Billy Joel on The Stranger. But we, you know, we do act, and there was a guy back in the 1800s who was a singer. But we do that. And then you wonder why you don't have true intimacy with people, because you're not being who you are. And it's really, I remember when I read that in Romans, and it talked about women exchanging, you know, having love with each other. And I remember reading that thinking, I should be more against that than I am. And then I thought, I am totally depraved. And when I work with my guys, I try to get them, because this took me a long time, that when you read about total depravity and there is no one righteous, not one, and all fall short of the glory of God, that's talking about me. It's not an idea that I go to church with a bucket of popcorn and watch. That's talking to me. And I don't have to take that to the cross. I got to take me to the cross, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it took me a long time to get that. Still, it's still a struggle. There's no momentum in this thing. I feel bad that you went through that. But having gone through that, you're going to come out on the other side with a lot more empathy for people that struggle. And part of the thing is, we don't in churches have a real comfortable atmosphere for people to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we, you know, we say, the recovery people say, we don't shoot our wounded. Well, churches do sometimes.
All right, we'll take a little break. We come back, lots more Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board, and Peter is our special guest here in studio. So we'll be right back. All right, we are back with Real Recovery. Bill and George, our special guest Peter tonight, is going to share some interesting statistics about pornography. Peter, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, so I got this from my life coach that I go to. That's been an unbelievable thing. Could talk about that forever, but 3 pages of pornography statistics. One, and this is a number I've just heard all over the place, but this is the youngest I've heard, but the average age of exposure to pornography is 8.
Wow. Well, kids can get access to their parents' phones, right?
Right. Well, or their own phones.
Or their own phones, yeah.
Yeah, I've talked to students, and they're talking about the younger siblings. Oh, the siblings are spoiled because they got their phone when they were 8 or 9
wow.
or 10. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is another really sad one, but 87% of teens say no one in their lives is helping them avoid pornography.
Mm.
And I think that the sad reality is that their dads, possibly their moms, also watching it. They don't want to be exposed themselves, so why would they talk to their kids about it? You know, I just think that's a really sad deal. This one, well, there's several that have to do with the church, and that's just kind of where my heart is just really heavy. But it says 93% of churches don't have a ministry program for those struggling with pornography. Which is, I think that's tragic. I think that's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't surprise me, though.
No.
I mean, they're not talking about it. I haven't heard a lot of sermons on it in my life. And I think it's the same thing like with your kids. It's really uncomfortable to talk about it, so let's take a pass.
Right.
Fair?
Right. Absolutely. For those under 18, children under the age of 10 account for 22% of online pornography consumption. I mean, I think what I have had to do is essentially unlearn so many of the things that I learned through pornography. I've had to unlearn what sex is for, its purpose, its design, its function. And I've had to unlearn what is normal and what's acceptable, what's kind, what's loving, and I'm single. I'm not married. And for the longest time I thought, well, once I get married, this won't be a problem. Once I get married, I'll just magically have the right view of marriage. But sadly, I think so many are going into marriages expecting sex to be porn. And that just leads to a whole world of hurt and brokenness and damage within marriages.
So the way it's supposed to be is a biblical act of worship. And that's not nearly as exciting as the other stuff. That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, too, a statistic that goes along with that. It says a pornography binge can produce up to 10 times more dopamine in the brain than relational sex. And again, I don't know exactly where that statistic is from, but like we were talking about earlier with dopamine, there's an ease and a comfort and a fast track to it that doesn't require anything of you.
I'm wondering how you would do the test on that. Take blood samples afterwards. Who'd volunteer for that?
You probably could measure brain activity.
Yeah, but who would go in to do it?
No.
But it's interesting, and it lines up with what I see. You know, in my clients in my life, it does.
Yeah.
There was a French researcher that wanted to do a side by side comparison study of young men who had viewed it and young men who had not, and all of his efforts went south because he couldn't find a group that had not. So that's.
I thought when you went French researcher, there was going to be a punchline. But I've been hanging around Rothstein too much.
Yeah, you have.
This is really interesting, and I'm waiting when we get done with the stats on how you fight it.
Hmm. Yeah. More stats, or should we move on?
Let's have one more stat.
Yeah, this is one that I think is. Not shocking, but incredibly sad and needs to change. Porn is been so connected with an increase in religious doubts and a decrease in commitment and behavior. So if a church-going man never or rarely used porn, there's a 1 in 3 chance he would serve or take some type of leadership role in his congregation. If he started using porn every month, his odds fell to 1 in 10. If he watched porn every week, there was a 1 in 20 probability that he would serve. If a man started using porn daily, his probability of serving went to almost 0. And I think
you're checking out.
What was that?
You're checking out.
Right. You're checking out, and you don't want to put yourself in a position where people might ask questions. There might be, again, exposure to what's really going on and accountability.
Well, there'd be a couple things I would think of. Either you wouldn't want to do it because you're not that into Christianity anymore. I think the greater chance would be the enemy's convicted you that Christ doesn't love you and you're a loser and you can't.
Right.
Yeah, well said. I appreciate those statistics because I think not only are they shocking, but they point out something about service to the kingdom, that if you're living in a sin that you are keeping secret, I think that's what the condition the enemy loves, is to have you in secret sin. That way he can...
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, he can crush you faster and keep you more ineffective for the kingdom.
I don't know about you. I keep my sins secret because I don't broadcast them.
Right.
So that's pretty natural. I think one of the problems that gets exacerbated by that is we have an institutional policy of keeping our... you know, sins hidden, where we show up and we're really blessed, and this is so edifying for me, and I start speaking in Christianese, and it's not helpful if you are a sinner, which the Bible told me everybody is. So maybe you can help reform that as a pastor, huh?
That's the hope.
Good for you.
So what would be a good program or a good route to take if church leaders are listening for helping people in the church address this?
If you're asking me...
I am asking you.
I struggle with the culture of program church. I understand that, programs are necessary to an extent because people have busy lives, they have schedules, they have things they're doing. But one of my frustrations has been that if there's an issue that's identified in the church, say it's pornography, say it's alcohol, it's drug addiction, whatever, oftentimes we get really excited about it, say this is a big deal, something's got to change, and then we come together and we make a program, or we have an event, or we hold some sort of one time, or maybe a few times, we'll get together and we'll get really excited. There'll be some breakthrough moments, some excitement, and then we walk away, we pat ourselves on the back, and that's it. In my experience, walking alongside of someone consistently over time, where you are opening up yourself to them, they're opening themselves up to you, you have ongoing vulnerable conversations, you can't replace that, and you can't just make that a programmed part of church life if that's not happening outside of the walls of the church. Because it's too easy to have a mountaintop moment and to say, all right, this is it. This is the turning point. This is the last straw for me. And then to walk away and say, but every day, choosing to submit myself and my sinful desires to Jesus, that sounds too hard. Every day, checking in with someone, saying, did I watch porn today? Did I masturbate? That sounds too hard. That sounds too painful. I'd rather not do that. I'd rather go to a one-time event where I can sit, absorb it, walk away, feel good about myself, and then it's not costing me anything more.
I think it's called discipleship in a way. Doesn't it sound that way to you, George?
Well, I was thinking when you said that, when I worked at the Salvation Army, we had a lot of volunteers, well-meaning, come down that weren't in addiction recovery, and they can present the gospel and, you know, salvation. But for the problem, what I've found is they weren't very effective. And number one, they don't realize how bad we are. And I think they don't, because they don't realize how bad they are either. So we're going to teach you rather than walk with you. So I'm a big fan of, and the stuff I've seen at church for addiction does not work nearly as well as the 12-step groups. But, you know, the 12-step groups are also a great harvest field. If you're a Christian and really love the Lord, you got to want to help this, you know, lost soul. But I mean, okay, so you're at church and they go, you know, we're going to have a porn addiction ministry at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. How many people are sitting in the parking lot to see who the perps are in the church going into the thing, you know? And there is problems like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my recovery, I'm an ongoing deal where I meet with guys every week that have the same issue, but it's not in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, that helps me be who I am rather than who I feel I should be. Fair?
Fair.
But I think we should also preach that everybody's a sinner and it's okay, because we kind of rank them, right? Porn's one of the worst. If you're a porn addict and you get an abortion, boy, then you're really on the list. And I think we need to re-educate and re-evaluate that we're all sinners.
Right. Right. And the issue is pornography in particular thrives in the dark. It thrives in the dark. It thrives in isolation. Unlike a cocaine addiction where you, unless you're your own supplier, you have to have a relationship with someone. You have to be getting a drug from somebody. With pornography, you're your own dealer. You know, you're your own dealer. You don't have to rely on anyone else to get the supply. And it just drives it deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're right.
That's interesting.
I've never heard it put that way.
Yeah, that was
really
interesting.
You're your own dealer.
Well, and you don't have to worry about doing 15 in a federal pen either.
And that's the fascinating thing, that culturally, we have these standards One of the statistics I didn't share, but is one of the most shocking and horrifying to me, is that rape pornography is one of the most popular genres of pornography. So if we're saying as a society, rape is wrong, and if you do it and you're caught, you're going to jail. But you can turn on your computer, you can put on your phone, rape pornography. Nobody cares.
Wow.
So is that, we'll get to that when we come back.
Let's take a little break. Yeah. We'll come back, address that. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Peter is our guest tonight. We'll be right back. Great discussion tonight, George, with Peter. He's being very transparent, honest, and courageous, I would say.
He has a ministry.
Yeah,
no
sure
doubt.
Does. Yep.
I think it's interesting. I've struggled with this my whole life. The best, you know, thing for me is I got old, and it's a lot easier now.
Hmm.
But I'm wondering if I'm listening tonight, and I'm hearing you, and you're so genuine, and you know what you're talking about. I have the problem. How do I get out of it? What do I do?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I reached rock bottom when I realized that the reason I wanted to get free was not because of a love for Jesus. It's exactly what we were just talking about. Not a love for Jesus, not a genuine heart conviction. It was because I didn't want to get in trouble.
So you had a love for you.
Right. I had a love for me, and was so afraid that, man, if this comes out, I'm done for. And it was actually my senior pastor. I was in this moment of unbelievable fear and trepidation, and I came to him, shared, and he responded with grace, and he responded with kindness, and he said, you know what, I'm going to walk with you through this. We're going to check in every week. We're going to talk about this. I believe in you. So being met with grace in that moment was transformational for me, because it made me realize, wait a minute, I haven't been pursuing purity and freedom because I actually want to be free. I've been pursuing it because I just don't want to get caught, and I don't want to deal with the consequences. And in that moment, the Holy Spirit, and I, like you said earlier, it's the power of the Holy Spirit that frees us from addiction. Ultimately, we can modify our behavior, we can change what we do, but at the end of the day, if he's not freeing us in our hearts and minds, then I don't think we have a chance. And in that moment, I went from fear of consequence to realizing, man, if I'm going to beat this thing, it's got to be because of my love for the Lord.
There you go.
And I was telling you guys about this book, but Finally Free by Heath Lambert. And he says, and this, I think this book is a few years ago, it's a little bit dated. He said, if you drive past a sex shop on your way to work every day, and you keep looking at it, and you keep looking, and maybe you go to it every once in a while, change your route.
Hmm.
If that doesn't work, sell your car. He said, if you struggle with your phone or your computer, get rid of it. I mean, I thought this book was going to be sort of a softball book. You know, I thought it was going to be just easy lobs out of the park. But the reality was, it was hard. And what he was saying was stark. And he said, when Jesus says that whoever looks upon a woman with lust has already committed adultery in his heart, and to cut off your hand or gouge out your eye, to throw it away, that he wasn't being literal, because we'd all have no hands and no eyes, but that he was literally being that serious about it. And it was through the grace and the kindness of my pastor, through that book, that I realized, man, I need to do whatever it takes. Like, I need to get radical. And so I went and I got connected with a life coach. And that was the best decision that I've ever made in my life. It went so far beyond just, all right, let's identify your triggers and let's just work on this and make sure. I mean, it went to the very core of who I am, my view of God, my view of myself. And one of the biggest things that was a turning point for me in the recovery process is establishing discipline. And one of the things my life coach says is that discipline precedes life.
Like this guy.
And so one of the first things he said he wanted me to do was every day I got to pray right away when I get, you know, wake up. And then I need to do reading and recovery. And it's 12-step work. And Doug Weiss is an unbelievable resource and all of his stuff. So pray, reading, and recovery. I need to call him, call my life coach every single day. And I need to say, have I watched porn? Have I masturbated? Have I used illegal drugs? Have I had sex outside of marriage? And are my lust levels up or down from normal? And then finally pray at night. And as simple as that sounds, I looked at it first and I was like, are you kidding me? I need to do all this every day. But what I've realized is that over time, I got into my addiction by numerous small bad choices.
Little habits. Yeah.
And the only way I was going to get out is by counteracting those with numerous small, good, God-honoring choices that I didn't feel like doing, right? You don't feel like doing every single day. But you know, if I'm not doing this, my heart's not going to change. The posture of my heart is not going to change. And having him, the life coach, and a 12-step group that I go to every week, knowing that I'm going to tell them every single week and him every single day what I'm doing and having accountability in that way. Because before then, for years, I'd have accountability. And what it looked like was, hey, man, I did it last night. Shoot. Try harder next time.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, I did it. I did it again. Ah, hey, I'll be praying harder. I mean, it was just we're all sinking. And you just kind of throw each other
raft.
A safety vest, like, yeah, while you're in the water. It's like, well, this isn't really doing much, but we're all drowning. So actually getting accountability from a man who is clean and who is sober, that was huge.
Yeah, when you said that's the most important decision you made in your life, I just need to correct you. That was the second most important decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
There we go.
Correct.
Receiving Christ or coming to faith and placing your hope and trust in Jesus was number one.
Absolutely.
Of course. I know that. I know you meant that. I just always want people, when they listen to the show, to hear that whatever addiction they are in, God can, through Jesus Christ in your life, break you from the power of sin. Because that's the only way the power of sin is going to be broken, is by the righteousness of Jesus coming into your life.
Right.
But just because you have forgiveness and eternal salvation doesn't guarantee you're going to be porn free or sober.
Of course not.
Right.
Of course not.
You know, you got to do the work. I really like the discipline thing. I pray for sobriety before I get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do that, I used to bring him in at 10 o'clock or noon. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I finally realized that applies to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went to the 12-step group with the, you know, people that have a common affliction and thoughts, did you feel like, I'm not alone anymore? I'm not really weird. And isn't that a great feeling? You're like survivors of a shipwreck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep bond.
I've felt more connected to those guys. And going back to the conversation about sort of the culture we've created in church, where it's like, hey, we're all struggling with this, but let's not talk about it. At least not here.
Sure.
That group has been a comfort to me, and I've felt more bonded and connected with those men than really any other church group, because we're not just giving lip service to the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually experiencing it and working that out in fear and trembling in our lives.
Mm. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. It's really been very helaful, and I know you have reached to a lot of people through this program. So thank you for being so vulnerable and courageous and honest. That's all the show we have for this episode, award-winning episode of Real Recovery. George, wouldn't you say?
It's a gift from God.
It is indeed. All right. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.